when I asked you for this series, I said, hey, man, you got a giant size X-Men laying around. And you just shot me a picture,
of the
real thing. And I'm like, fuck you. It's not what I'm talking about.
One that you can
read. One that you can actually read. I don't mean one that's sealed up, protected from UV rays and anyone fucking breathing on it or touching it with their dick fingers. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Blitzkrieg Pop. This is another supplemental featuring a comic book review. And also, I have with me a partner in the studio today. I have my main man.
Munch.
That's right. The classic, the Munch intro.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it.
I don't see why.
Oh, you're a legend.
Munch.
Just face it. You're a legend.
That was all Coble, and he won't admit to it, now, which is hilarious.
Coble won't admit to a lot of things. Yeah. You know, he won't admit that he's never given me back my Mario 3 Nintendo Power either. You know, he just won't admit that.
That's amazing.
He has an excellent memory. I know he does. I know the motherfucker remembers.
No, I mean, like, that's the thing about it. Like, it'd be fine. There's nothing. There's no reason to deny it. But
well, at this point, I think it's bigger than the Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
But does he deny that he named you Munch?
He didn't name me Munch. He just said it that way.
Yeah, well, I know he didn't name you
Munch. Yeah, he was just the one that went, like, we were hanging out one day. He was, what's a Munch? And I think it might have even been at like a Comic-Con.
I think it was. I'm sure he was probably wasted.
Probably. Yeah.
sounds like a drunk Justin.
We were at a con. There was a pretty good chance for
that. It was pretty good. I remember not being sober for 3 or 4 days at a time.
Oh, yeah.
During convention, man, haven't been to a convention in a minute.
It's been a minute.
Fuck. My last one was before we started Infinite, 2015.
Ooh, that's tough, man.
I'm telling you, 6 years. I had an unbroken streak of 97 to 2015.
Yeah.
So I went from 96 to 2015, never missed a Chicago Comic Con, and then now I haven't been in 5 years.
Man, oh man.
6 years.
6 years.
And it's not looking to get any better.
Not looking good for this year.
No, it's sure not. But so today we, at the request of patron Matt Humphrey,
mm-hmm.
are going to take a look at Giant Size X-Men number 1 from 1975.
Which I believe is the reason I'm here.
That is exactly the reason. Now, why would you think I'd want you here for Giant Size X-Men number 1?
Well, I'm an X-Men guy.
You are an X-Men guy. I would say you are the Blitzkrieg Pop's
resident X-Men guy?
Resident X-Men aficionado.
Oh, I like that.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, makes it sound much more official.
It's very, very proper. It's
quite prestigious.
It's very prestigious. Very prestigious.
Very prestigious.
And it's true.
Yeah.
You have talked nonstop shit about this fucking book since 2011.
Yeah.
When you stole one.
When I was very, very lucky to have just happened upon one.
You absolutely did. Now recall this story for us. How did this go down?
The way I remember it, and I believe AJ was with me. We went down to the floor just looking
at Chicago.
At right? Chicago. Yeah. In the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center.
Oh man, before the Rosemont.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And
Rosemont. I almost said Rosebud.
Rosebud. We were looking at this dude's booth, walked up and kind of struck up a conversation with a gentleman.
You got buying skills.
Oh, I do. I try. I really try. Because, if you can get close to a dude, you can weasel him out of a couple bucks.
I know. You fucked me over a bunch.
Yeah, yeah. So, talking to the guy, telling him, you know, what I'm looking for, what I'm, you know, interested in, telling him, like, I like the X-Men, I like this character, I like that character. And I bring up Colossus. And the guy's like, well, if you're interested in that, I think I got something you might want to look at. I'm like, cool, you know, because I look up at his wall of keys and it's just raw books everywhere.
Now, you were in the market for CGC.
I wasn't really. I mean, I think this is the first CGC that I bought.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because, like, he lifts up the tablecloth and in a box hidden underneath all of the rest of the stuff that he's selling, he just pulls out this CGC copy of Giant Size X-Men 1.
Whoo, baby. What was the grade on it?
And I, well, I looked at it and I'm like, holy shit, that's the book.
That's it.
And it was graded, it was already graded as CGC at a 6.0.
Wow.
So
6.0.
Yeah. Like I'm, of course, in my head running through, like, I can't afford this thing. This thing's going to be a fucking mint. And I just asked the dude, I'm like, what do you got in it? What do you want for it? And he goes, looking to get rid of it for about $250.
Fuck.
And I didn't even haggle it. Just
fuck,
done.
Man. Because you stole it.
Yeah.
You fucking stole it at $250.
Yeah, and I look over at AJ. He's salivating, like, foaming at the mouth.
I wish I would have bought it for $250.
Yeah, I know.
Thing is, I would have already sold it by now.
Well, that's, like I told, that's one of those books that, barring some kind of financial disaster, I'll never sell it.
I don't blame you. I mean, it's that important to
it's
you.
It's that important to me.
That's the first appearance of your dude, Colossus.
Yep.
Which is, by all rights and purposes, Giant Size X-Men 1 is a fucking mega key.
Yeah.
As big as X-Men 1, as far as X-Men 1 debuts the original team, Magneto, Professor X, and the name X-Men. You go along, it turns into a reprint series at issue 67, and then you get this Giant Size X-Men 1 in 75, and that is the number two key in the X-Men line, Giant Size X-Men 1. All new, all different X-Men.
Yeah, because, I mean, you get first Thunderbird, first Storm, first Nightcrawler, first Colossus, first Krakoa, first Ileana.
First Ileana, unnamed.
Unnamed.
But she's there,
but like
in the Colossus
huge,
origin.
I mean, it's technically the, what, second or third Wolverine?
It's, you know, what's funny is technically, at his fourth appearance, it's his second.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, whatever.
But they consider it second Wolverine.
Yeah,
like, it's
whatever.
Major fucking key.
It's a big key, and you have it.
Yeah.
And you have it, and you actually swindled some poor motherfucker out of it.
It was his offer. I didn't even haggle with him.
Right.
I just gave him $250 and ran.
I don't blame you. I would have done the same. And we probably got drunk that night and just celebrating.
Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, at the time we were putting like stuff up on the top of the bedpost.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah,
actually.
And I think it was sitting next to the picture of like Stan Lee or something.
Oh, did we get? Is that the year we met Stan?
It was like 2011, 2012, something like that.
Yeah, that probably is around the year.
So it was right around that time where
saw him eating soup.
Yes, getting down on that soup. It would have been sitting next to the picture of us and somebody. That much I remember.
Yeah, and I remember. Is that the same year that Justin broke a bunch of Alex's statues?
Oh yeah, because he was playing with them.
He kept playing with them.
Forgot about that. That was good.
He broke like a Sandman.
And a lizard.
Yep. Yeah. Justin, you bastard. Alex has never forgiven you.
That's funny.
He's not here, though.
He's not here to defend himself.
He's not here to defend that. Because, you know, this is when Matt said X-Men, I was like, yeah, I would really like to tackle the X-Men. That sounds fun, you know. But then I thought, you know, I should really have Munch on for this because Munch is an X-Men dude. That's kind of your thing.
Yeah. Well, anybody that listens to the show, and I know this is the supplemental, but
this is the supplemental.
Anybody that listens to the Blitzkrieg Pop knows that
I like to call it the Pop Proper.
Pop Proper, I'm cool with that.
There you go.
Knows that in the Munch versus the Silver Age stuff, I'm chomping at the bit to get to X-Men 1.
You know what? And I hope I have some listeners here that have read X-Men 1 that know that he does not want to read that. Because he thinks he does, though.
I want to read it.
It's
going to be good.
It's not bad. I don't mean that. You know I love Silver Age shit.
Oh, yeah, you do. I don't. That's the thing.
I don't know if it's comparable to some of this modern X-Men stuff, but it is good, though.
Yeah.
It's where it all starts, and we'll get there. Actually, we looked. What
it's a minute.
It's gonna
take a while.
Our next issue on the supplemental is gonna be Fantastic Four 5, First Doctor Doom.
Yeah, that's on the proper, isn't it?
Yes, that's on the proper. Oh, did I say supplemental? Mm-hmm. My bad. Yeah, that is on the proper, and that's quite the doozy.
Yeah,
right there.
Kind of looking forward to it.
I can't wait for you to read that one.
Yeah.
I think you're going to really, it's going to really tickle your pickle.
Did that today, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, you're an X-Men guy. So, give me some, why are you an X-Men guy?
It's hard to explain because I don't exactly know, but.
That's fair.
Growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, like, cartoon was huge in 92.
Oh, man, wasn't it, though?
Yeah, it was huge.
It was my jam.
And I fucking loved it.
I fucking loved it. I mean, even though it's bad.
Like, Rogue and Jubilee and Storm, I was just like, oh, them ladies
so you,
on it.
Wait, so you're hot into the ladies, yeah. Huh?
Like 6-7 years old, like
looking at Jubilee.
How about that?
You ever looking at Jubilee going, yeah. How about that?
Yeah, and Wolverine was like mega huge and Colossus was on it and the Juggernaut. And
the Juggernaut. Yeah. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
I mean, there's a lot of cool shit in that cartoon that I loved, and it's not that good when you go back and watch it.
It's not that great. But can you remember what's the first X-Men comic you bought? Can you remember that?
No.
Okay, can you tell me can you remember what's the first comic you ever bought?
That I can remember.
Okay.
And technically, I don't know if it counts as an X-Men comic or not, but...
what's that mean?
Well, I'll get to it. The first comics I remember buying, I bought two in the same day.
Okay.
I remember going to the Food World, which is amazing that now I live around the corner from where that used to be.
Now you're talking about on Hope Camp and...
Hope Camp and Husbands.
And Husbands, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I begged my mom to buy me these two comic books. And the first one was... it was Venom number one, Funeral Pyre.
Oh my God! With the Punisher.
With the Punisher.
I know the piece of shit.
That like
you're
shitty
about.
Red and
it has
orange
some kind of
foil.
Weird foil. Yeah.
Yeah. Just bad.
Holographic.
Yeah. But the second one that I got was, what if the Hulk had killed Wolverine?
Oh,
I know. But
which
it was,
is what if 50?
It was in the early 90s.
Right?
Yeah, it was like in the 50. Early 90s.
Oh, that's like 93?
Yeah, something like that. So
something like that?
That would have been like 7.
Yeah, that's 93. Wow.
But with Wolverine, 7. I mean, he was a part of the X-Men in 1975. Does that count as my first X-Men book?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Hulk and Wolverine have giant ties to the X-Men,
there
right?
You go.
I mean, especially Wolvie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's part of the all-new, all-different.
Yeah, second appearance.
Whatever.
Second, fourth appearance.
Fourth, calling it second, whatever. That's just for, you know, that's to make giant size even a bigger key.
Yeah,
as if it needs any help.
Those are the two books that I bought. I bought Funeral Pyre and What If the Hulk Had Killed
Now,
Wolverine.
Is that the What If that has like the pile of bones on it?
Yeah, and there's like a gravestone behind him.
And they're foil.
It's embossed.
Right? So you bought all the dumbass.
Yes. The dumb 90s bullshit.
The dumb 90s covers.
If it was dumb 90s bullshit, I bought it.
One was foil embossed and one was just foil.
Yep.
Man, munch. But you know what? That makes me proud, though. Yeah, but that's 1993, man.
I was 7.
That's probably cooler buys than me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the first comics I can remember buying and reading were probably G.I. Joe. And that was in around like 89.
Yeah.
90s, yeah. Somewhere along in there, and they're not good.
And you would have been close to the same age that I was.
I was close to the same age. I was 7-8 years old, yeah. And you know, I would read them, and then you know, use my rotary phone to to call Justin and you know, talk about what happened to Snake Eyes.
God
or whatever.
Forbid you didn't get that one number short.
Oh man!
Before you let it go,
all those fucking clicks, all that bullshit going on. It's not as bad as calling a fax machine. Or have you ever done that before?
Yep. Dude, I work with that stuff. Yes, absolutely. I've done that.
That's what Ultron should have sounded like.
Right?
That would have been epic.
Definitely should have sounded like a dial-up modem.
Oh man! Speaking of that, we've only got like another week for Falcon Winter Soldier.
I know.
Holy shit! Is Omega Red in it?
He might be. Who knows?
You just said, "Oh fuck!" When I said Omega Red, you just say, "Oh fuck!"
Fuck.
Yeah, totally amazing.
Omega
you know
Red?
That?
Oh fuck!
So apparently, though, Tim Roth was cast for She-Hulk.
Oh really?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Not Falcon Winter Soldier, though.
Well, I mean,
so
at least in She-Hulk, it makes sense,
right? And we just talked about this on Blitzkrieg Pop Proper episode 51.
Yep.
So, if you guys haven't listened to it yet, you should check that out.
Hell yeah.
Now, as of right now, we're going to move into our review of Giant Size X-Men number 1, 1975. Now, here's the thing. I couldn't afford one just to buy it. And I know this is unbelievable, right?
I mean, come on, Adam. I've got one.
I know. I'm just a putz like that. So, I don't have one. And so, what I had to do is I had to go out and find one. And I was Googling reprints, and the first thing I ended up with was a classic X-Men number one. And I'm flipping through it, and I'm like, this can't be the right book. I mean, it had pieces of it, right? But I knew it wasn't complete, and I was like, what the fuck? So, because I had come across that classic X-Men number one was a reprint of Giant Size. Well, it's not a complete reprint. It's just a piece of a reprint with new stories added into it. Bullshit. Do not buy that. I'm not saying don't buy that, but if you're looking for a reprint of Giant Size X-Men, oh wow. That was nice. If you're looking for a reprint of Giant Size X-Men, don't buy that. What I found instead was X-Men Special Edition number 1 from 1983, which is crazy. I was 2 years old when this book came out. Is an absolute amazing reproduction of Giant Size X-Men 1 with a new cover by Dave Cockrum, a wraparound cover. It's a beautiful blue color. And honestly, I think I picked this bad boy up for $10.
That's a good looking book.
And it's a sharp looking book. So I just wanted to put that out there that if you guys don't want to spend thousands, because that's what a real one costs, you could always pick this up.
I mean,
this is technically second printing variant.
Yeah.
Now James, Dismore is going to get really excited about this. This is a second print variant.
That book's getting hot.
It might get hot. It has a couple. There's a couple things about it. It has Ileana unnamed in it,
right?
You know, yeah. Which is hot.
Absolutely.
I mean, Magic was in the New Mutants movie,
right?
Yeah. I mean, this is a big deal. So, as the name implies, Giant Size X-Men 1 is not just a standard issue. It's actually a 68-page sort of. You know what? Here's what I found out. I had to do a little research here. I wasn't sure exactly what the Giant Size title was. Giant Size were not annuals, but quarterlies. Did you know this?
I did not.
They were produced every 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And were quarterly books where at the beginning, the idea was it's going to be, you know, it's going to be 68 pages of all new stories. Well, it only took one or two for them to go, fuck that. That's, yeah. That's a lot of fucking work. But this happened to be the first one for the X-Men. And what's really crazy about it, because, you know, as we've already talked about, it's a mega key. It has a bunch of first appearances in it. Quasi-racist some things in it that, looking back from 2021 to 1975, they don't age well.
Yeah, there's some questionable shit.
There's some questionable shit in there, and we're going to go over that. I mean, wow, Proudstar and Storm.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's... I know for a fact it's not handled the way it should be.
No, they didn't really address what would have been the future elephant in the room with that stuff.
No, they didn't, and... You know, it's hard to look back at a piece of history like this from now and it absolutely deserves to be held up into the light and said, hey, this is fucked up. But they have fixed this.
Yes.
They have, I mean, for the most part. I'm not going to say that it's all wonderful and everything's fine, but they have fixed a lot of this kind of crap.
They've worked pretty hard to make sure that it's not that way anymore.
Yeah, so... You know, we're going to review this book and we're going to talk about that, but there is some shit in here that's fucked up. I mean, there's a few things in the book that actually get said that are fucked up.
Oh, yeah. And I wrote most of it down just to make sure that we didn't miss it.
Yeah, and we kind of had to. So this, you know, this is a big intro, though. This has a bunch of first appearances in it. But what's crazy about this is at the time in 1974, Marvel had a new president. His name was Al Landau. And he was famous, he got into Marvel by getting Marvel stuff licensed into foreign markets. And it was his idea, he kind of said this, you know, in the office, like, we need a team that represents more of the world. We need a book on the shelves that is more international,
mm-hmm.
that has more international appeal. Well, X-Men being the second book of this overage to be canceled, behind The Incredible Hulk, which we reviewed last episode.
Yep.
X-Men was the second book to be canceled. Now, it lasted a little longer. Number 66 was its last original story before, in issue 67, it becomes just a reprint title. So when this edict comes down that we want an international team, Roy Thomas, who was then editor of Marvel, was like, oh, fuck, I guess the only book we really have that's not really being published, that has nothing really going on with it right now, is X-Men. So how about we work on an X-Men book? Like, we'll put together something for the X-Men. We'll make an international X-Men team. Who are we going to get to do it? Well, he went to Len Wein, who had created Wolverine over in Hulk, and Dave Cockrum. And Cockrum at the time was kind of known as the costume guy. Like, this guy was just full of fucking ideas. They put these two guys together, sequestered them and said, give us a story. Well, sequester's not the right term, because Chris Claremont was like banging at the door the whole time going, hey, I've got ideas for this. You know, and as we know, he would take over the book and absolutely run with it. But we're before that right now.
Yep.
So we have Cockrum and we have, you know, Len Wein. And Cockrum had come off a stint at DC where he was trying to get a new book launched called The Outsiders. And he had created this character named Nightcrawler. So that's X-Men number one that gets added to this book is fucking Nightcrawler. Apparently, Dave Cockrum just had notebooks full of character ideas. So he basically created all these new X-Men. And so they wanted this international team, and my gosh, did they ever get it.
So they
put this book out, Giant Size X-Men 1, and it wasn't an immediate hit. A lot of people were kind of like, what the fuck is this shit?
Well, they wanted their original team.
They wanted their original team, and that's not what happened. Now, X-Men had, what at the time, low sales, which is like 200,000 a book, which by modern standards, any book would die. To have anyone in the comics industry would die to have their book sell 200,000 copies. At the time, that was considered low sales.
Yeah.
So when this book happened, though, it actually caught a lot of attention, and rightfully so, maybe. But let's jump into this thing. Let's. Or do you have anything you'd like to say about it?
No, not really.
No, nothing.
No, I mean, I got more than enough to say about it, but we'll cover most of that going through the book. So here we are. We're diving in to Giant Size X-Men number one. Oh, yeah.
I will say that Gil Kane cover is fucking beautiful.
That Gil Kane cover is a little busted.
The Gil Kane cover?
Yep. Iconic cover. Little busted. Still cool.
What's busted about it?
You're looking at the top of four of their heads.
I mean, you're such a picky bastard.
Well, like, if you're going to give me a book that introduces these people.
Yeah.
Why do I need to know what the top of Colossus's head looks like?
Well, that's important. Maybe you didn't know how, like, square it was.
It's just a square.
Well, it is pretty square. He's a metal guy. I mean, he's pretty
John
square.
John Proudstar, you can't even see his face.
Well, you know, but they're busting through. Like, they're like busting through the old X-Men.
I mean, Nightcrawler, you can see his face.
Yeah.
Storm, you can see her face.
Now, how do you
Wolverine, you can see her face. Cyclops,
you can see part
of his face.
You can see her face.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wolverine's her face.
Whatever.
He's got a her face.
Storm. Her. Wolverine. His.
You know what? Mine doesn't have the original cover on it.
See, that's the problem. That's why I can look at this and I can go, that's a little busted.
You know what? I think it's an awesome cover. I like the white. Man, the white, the letters really pop on it. It's cool. Cyclops is on it twice.
I mean, yeah. Cyclops is on it twice.
He is. He's busting through himself.
I mean, it's a great cover. It's an iconic cover.
It is.
But if you start breaking it down a little bit, it's a little busted.
It's a Gil Kane cover.
Because, I mean, the top, like...
Well, they're ripping through, like...
Yeah, but you got two other characters looking up at the front, and then you've got three looking at their feet.
Okay, but look at it. I'd say Wolverine ripped it, and then Colossus actually busted through it. So that's why he's in that juggernaut...
But he's got his hand out.
I'm busting through. He's busting through, man. He's fucking ripping
break on
through
to
that
the,
shit.
I hate the doors.
The
can't fucking stand the doors.
Hate the doors. Okay, that's interesting. Hate them.
That's another episode.
That's a whole other episode. But so you don't see any value in Gil Kane's artwork there?
No, I like it.
I mean, like, they're ripping through the old team.
Looks great on my shelf.
Yeah, it looks fucking wonderful, doesn't it? Just sitting up there making money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so shut the fuck up. You got a book that's
sitting
there
behind all of my statues. Mm.
Yeah, you know, I know that in the picture you sent me, it's like it's the Bowen bust of Professor X. Yeah. He's touching his head, and I'm like, man, that's really cool.
Yep, got it right there.
I do not have Professor X.
I do.
I do not.
It sits behind my Professor X, my Iceman. I believe that I've got something else on that shelf. I think it's my Colossus, like, holding the big rock.
You got it. Like, is it a statue?
Yeah, it was the Dark Phoenix saga where he holds the rock and you can interchange it with the Wolverine.
That's a great
statue that goes with it.
Yeah.
And it's sitting next to the Mary Jane.
Anyway, so Munch is not thrilled with the cover. Surprise, surprise.
It's okay. I'm just not thrilled.
I mean, I'm sure our listeners are shocked.
cool, that cool, but like, not great.
You're like, oh, fuck the cover.
Have I ever liked any cover?
No, you haven't yet. Not on any one book that we reviewed have you said, oh, that's a cool cover.
Got a lot of shitty covers.
You liked Hulk.
I liked Hulk. He was just blonde.
You like, no, God, yeah, never mind. You didn't even, you fucking harped on him being blonde for a fucking hour. Never mind. What am I talking about? You didn't like that.
What are we getting into here?
Yeah, what am I getting? Why did I invite you over
you
here?
You asked me to be a part of this. This is your fault.
Yeah. So basically, the book opens up to this really, you know what's really interesting about this first page?
They're all on fire.
Well, there's fire. But it's like, it's a really ugly page, but it's also really awesome, too. Yeah,
I get that.
Like, if there's really, okay, there's something wrong with the originals in the background.
Beast is busted as fuck, but yeah. Good splash page. I mean,
this image of Beast is really fucked.
It's so bad.
It's really fucked up. Now, you know, Beast had already quit the X-Men at this point and become an Avenger. But I don't. He looks scared.
It's so he bad.
Beast looks really... Now, this is Dave Cockrum art here, and Beast just looks terrified.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because there's a new team burning a hole in him.
It kind of looks like he stepped on a cat turd.
And he's got he's got a vibe.
He's like smooshing through his toes.
It doesn't. It's not good. I don't know what happened here.
It's so bad.
I feel like Cockrum's art, for the most part, this issue is wonderful.
Yeah, but like everything else is amazing.
That is shitty looking.
But that Beast face is busted.
So would you have taken this page as the cover over Gil Kane? Because it's basically the same image. It's a similar image.
I wouldn't trade the image for that Beast face.
So that's a negative
no.
on that. You know what I love? I love when a comic, and this really dates this book, but that it opens up, and it's going to be it's a new comic about a new X-Men team, and on the very first page, they show you everything.
Yep, right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
No mystery at all.
Zero mystery here. Just jump right into it. Now, you did point out something very interesting. The colorist is Glennie Wien. And I do wonder now if that is in relation to Lynn Wien, who is credited as writer and editor and co-creator, along with Dave Cockrum.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure.
I don't know, because...
Then you got George Costanza as the letterer.
John Costanza. George. We got a Festivus for the rest of us over here.
That's right.
But, yeah, interesting. I did not notice that. I didn't pay any attention to that wrongly, because I usually do look at who the colorist is because it's very important. I did not pay much attention to it on this page because this page is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
For having the most busted Beast ever.
And yours is better than mine.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yours is a little better than mine.
Oh, well, I think mine's red and yours is blue.
Yeah, mine's busted and yours is really...
That blue image looks pretty...
It's now, bad.
Mine is some kind of different coloring here, yep. I do believe, especially on this page. I don't know about the rest of it, and that's why we can compare here.
Yeah.
Munch is looking at it digitally on Marvel.com. So,
yeah, because even like my title top up here is flipped from yours.
Everything's different.
Yep.
So everything about yours is different. Well, basically this first page is just telling us the grandeur and the glory... Begin anew with Second Genesis. And we see the new team just ripping through the old one, which is never a really great sign.
No.
If this was a NASCAR team, that'd be bad. They'd just be killing each other. If this was any team, any sports team.
And baseball, basketball, football.
Ripping through your old teammates and just, that'd be bad.
That's a problem usually.
It seems like an issue. Anyway, we jump right to Nightcrawler, who we've already kind of talked about for a second. That Dave Cockrum had created him for a DC book. And crazily, they did not like the idea of Nightcrawler, which I don't understand. He's one of my favorite X-Men.
I fucking love Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler is the shit. A little pious. Not always my favorite thing, but I accept it from a man who looks like a demon.
Yeah.
I will accept that.
I think that was kind of the point, was that, you know, like him looking like a demon forced him into the religion.
Yeah, into the cloth.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's kind of, I mean, not here in his conception. There's a lot not here in the initial conception, but that's normal.
Yeah, there's a lot you won't get for like another 20 years.
I do want to say there's a lot of keys that are like this book where... It's not necessarily, it's the first appearance of a character. It's not necessarily the best story you're ever going to read. That's what I want to say.
Totally agree.
That happens a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you know, in this era.
Which is what I think is so great about tearing down the Silver Age.
I don't see, Silver Age, I don't want to get, see, I would almost agree with you, except that you got to have fun with books too. See, some, I don't know, some modern stuff gets so dark and fucking just dreary that it's no fun.
I agree, and I have a lot of fun turning them down.
Yeah, well, that's, you know what? Fuck it all, rip it all down, right? But anyway, we open here on Nightcrawler in Wenzeldorf, Germany.
Yes.
Which I guess this is going to be his hometown. Oh, great. Bunch did all kinds of research for this.
I didn't do shit.
He actually is from Wenzeldorf, Germany.
I read the book.
I read the book. And what did you think overall?
I own the book.
Now, you know what? We'll get the overall statements at the end of it. Yeah, I know you fucking own it. God damn. I feel like a dog that's pissing the floor and you just keep rubbing my face.
Alex talking about Japan.
Oh, shit. Yeah, like, this is your Japan. Like, okay, Munch, I know.
You might actually be my Japan.
You own a fucking giant size X-Men. All right, Jesus.
Real proud of that.
I fucking get it. All right. Fucking get it. You don't even like Gil Kane. All right.
I don't even like that cover.
I don't even like that guy. I don't even like Dave Cockrum. Dave Cockrum can't even draw.
Actually, his Nightcrawler is pretty good.
Actually, his Nightcrawler is bitching. He was actually really proud of creating Nightcrawler.
That's a good one.
Man, what's the story? He had created him.
The way I understood it was that he was in like a foxhole in the war.
In Vietnam, right?
Yeah, I think so. And just during some gunfire one night was like, hey, I thought of this dude and just sketched it out, and that was it.
I mean, they say that when he came to this book, he had like 8 notebooks full of characters. I mean, he had so many characters that they had to say no. Like, they had to say no to a bunch of them.
We got
to
stop somewhere. You can't just put 40 people in this book.
Yeah, it's insane. So here we go. We get Nightcrawler. He's being chased through a town with pitchforks and torches, which is normal. You know, people are really scared. This is how people react.
It's very, very Frankenstein.
In Germany in the 70s. It is very, very Frankenstein. I would hope that people were better than this, but apparently, according to Lin Wein and Dave Cockrum, they're not.
And not in Wenzeldorf.
Not in Wenzeldorf. No. That place is fucked. You don't believe me? Ask Kurt Wagner.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, he's being chased by a mob. He somehow jumps up on a roof. He never bamfs.
Nope.
I've noticed he never teleports here. Nope. Do we even see him teleport in this episode, in this issue?
Yes, okay. But it's much later.
Okay, I forgot. So
And it doesn't bamf, and there's fire instead of just, the smoke.
Okay, so it's just fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
Okay. He gets himself cornered, basically on a rooftop, and he says to himself, I came here to learn, and all you're going to do is show me hate.
I'll show you what I've learned.
Then I'm going to show you what I've learned. Yep. And he jumps down to kick the shit out of him.
And he gets a couple good licks into him.
He gets a bunch of good licks in, and they're breaking out the stake, because they're going to stake him, because he's obviously...
Medium well.
He's obviously a fucking vampire here.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they get a mental command to stop.
Professor X steps in, and he's like, whoa, motherfucker, leave him alone.
Yeah, leave him alone. He says, hey, Kurt, you said you came here to learn. I'm going to offer you a chance to learn at my school in New York for gifted people such as yourself. Yep. And he's like, well, I mean, I guess I'll take that offer.
Yep.
Nightcrawler recruited.
Might as well. I mean, shit. At least in the school in America, they might not try to stake him or burn him.
I would say, better than being, burned by a very well-dressed mob.
Better than being in Dusseldorf.
Yeah, Wenzeldorf. Wenzeldorf. Don't get that wrong now. It's Wenzeldorf.
Whatever.
Oh, come on. That's very important to the plot here.
Is it?
Yeah, very. If it hadn't been for the Wenzeldorfians... Then, he may not have ever joined the X-Men.
Yeah, he may not have thought humanity was a bunch of dicks. And
right. Now we jump to Quebec, Canada.
Hey, there's a lot of good ice fishing up there in Quebec.
Quebec. So we do jump to this facility in Quebec, Canada, and it's the special government agency that's in charge of a very special agent. The agent cipher-coded Weapon X, which I did not realize that all the way back here, he was called Weapon X.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was later. Kind of cool to see that here, even in his
second appearance.
180, 181, 182, giant size one.
Yep.
Second appearance.
Yep.
Whatever. Yep.
He was already Weapon X.
He was already Weapon X, and I did not know that. Now, interestingly, he works in an office building. It's not really the way I picture Wolverine.
He has a little cubicle.
He's got a cubicle.
Those little name plaques on the front of his desk. Yeah, just says
he,
Wolverine.
You know, he basically just barges in and says, you know, really shitty stuff to the boss. That's kind of his. He's like Dwight. He's just real shitty all the time. You know, he busts in and he says, "All right, gents, I'm here. So who's this bigwig you want me to meet?" This little dude's like, "Well, I guess it's Professor X." Professor X is like, "I'm the bigwig Wolverine, Professor Charles Xavier, at your service." So he basically says, "Would you like a chance to come work for me? I'm recruiting." And his boss is like, "Now, wait a second. What the fuck?
We spent a whole bunch of money on you.
We spent a whole bunch of money on this guy." And Wolverine, in what I think is my favorite moment this entire issue, pops one single claw.
Yep.
Cuts his tie off.
Yep.
As an office rebel would do. And says, "I have resigned my commission effective immediately.
I go where I want to go.
If you want to find me, you know where you can find me."
And he's just being a total turd.
Yep.
And decides that he's leaving with Professor X. Yep. And that is number two recruited.
Wolverine on the team.
Moving right along, we get to
your two panels of Banshee.
Your favorite of this whole book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you dislike Banshee so much?
I don't dislike Banshee. I like Banshee. He's Irish, and he flies. I'm fine with that.
He screams so loud that he can fly.
Yeah, and like it propels his body up.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's real stupid, but it's fun.
Now, he first appeared back in like X-Men 22 or 23.
Yeah, it was pretty early.
He's way on back there. He's definitely not a new character.
No.
But he's an all-hands-on-deck kind of character.
But I love this part because everybody that knows Banshee knows he's Irish.
Yes.
But they show him in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry.
He's Southern Irish. That's his thing. He's like Southern Irish.
It's so ridiculous.
You don't think you can be Irish and be Southern?
Are you sure you can?
Well, there he is.
Sean Cassidy is obviously doing it.
He's proving it.
You know that? Sean Cassidy?
I know that's his fucking name, douchebag. No, you stumped me. That's Sean. Who is that? Sean Connery?
Eric O'Grady.
There you go. Yeah. Fuck you. You said you didn't know which Ant-Man was Ant-Man.
I don't know which one.
Yeah,
which.
Fuck you.
I know the names. That's about it.
Give us a rundown of what happens here.
Xavier comes in and he's like, "Hey, Banshee, I need your help." Banshee's like, "Cool, let's go." That's basically it.
And that's basically it. Cool. I'm Irish. I'm drunk. I'm ready. I'm Southern.
See, he belongs in the South.
He does.
Yeah.
And
I've got Skip's story totally. It's just two panels.
That's it. Just two panels. So far, Dave Cockrum's art is very serviceable. I mean, it's actually really nice.
Yeah, I like it.
Up to this, now we're almost to the debut of another character, but so far, I mean, it's he's good at telling stories.
Well, especially getting into the Storm stuff.
Now we're like about to, yeah. Now here we go. Good. It actually picks up right here. Now this is some of the stuff that maybe, you know, it's insensitive, or maybe
could be.
Maybe it's not thought out completely.
Yeah.
If you read it, it can definitely come off like a "you're stupid, I'm smarter than you" kind of thing that happens here with Charles and Aurora. But it says Kenya, you know, it's in Kenya, East Africa. Some people in a tribe like come to this woman and they beg her for rain to make their crops grow. And of course, she rises into the sky and she brings the thunderstorms, which is, you know, part of being an Omega level mutant.
I thought it was really different because the way that they portray her in this first part where they first introduce her is like she's an actual goddess.
They do portray her as a goddess.
Because like she just appears at this stone portal.
She believes she's a goddess here. They think the tribesmen think she's a goddess. She believes she's a goddess.
Well, they even make mention in this very well done panel here right in the middle that she has eyes older than time.
Yes, there are some mentions here that make you think she is a goddess.
Yeah.
But then there's others here that make you think she's not.
Yeah.
All around, I don't want to say botched, but you know what? It's so short. It's kind of, everything in this book is kind of like an Ocean's 11 kind of recruiting the team, and it's kind of like really quick to get to the story. So it's not as bad as Banshees. It's like two panels.
Yeah.
I mean, you actually get some story here. Of course, Storm is a new character here. Mm-hmm. Storm will go on to be a major player in the X-Men.
Absolutely.
The B team leader. She leads Blue.
Yeah.
Blue is her team.
Yeah.
She's a big deal. But here she creates a storm and of course it rains and then, you know, the men praise her and then a little guy rolls up on his wheelchair and tells her, you know, hey, you know, you're not really a goddess. You know, you're a mutant.
Oh, fantastic art and color on that page.
Fuck, yeah.
I mean, that's not, a great...
See, mine looks a lot different than that.
Yeah, it does. That's why I wanted you to see this one. And yeah, maybe mine's not the right
see,
one.
See, I don't know. I don't know which one's
this
right.
This is beautiful. Well, whoever did this is fucking great.
That is really nice
all
coloring.
All the blues and purples and shit going on. Really, hopefully, really good.
Hopefully your digital version's the real one. I don't... See, like, that's the thing. I cannot read a real one.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never read this book before. I thought I'd... You know what's funny is I thought I'd read this book before. And then after Matt requested it, I'm like, oh, I know that story. And I started, like, doing some Googling, and I'm like, fuck, I don't know this story.
What'd you read?
I had actually... This sounds crazy. We were talking about comic books that we first got us, you know, going. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was about 10 or 11, Marvel had started producing the Marvel Masterworks. And somewhere along 12, 13, I had picked up volume 24 of the Marvel Masterworks there that actually prints Chris Claremont and John Byrne's X-Men. It starts at 111. I don't remember how far it goes. 111 to 121 or something. Mm-hmm. Well, in my youth, I remember reading this story of X-Men 111 against Arcade, where Beast, an X-Man, finds the new team in a circus.
Yep.
And I had always assumed that is where they came from. That Beast had found them in a circus. Like, that is their... You know, I did... As a child or whatever I was, preteen, whatever the fuck, mm-hmm. I thought that was the origin of the new team. I never knew any different. You know, I didn't know they'd already been there. Because it seemed like, to me, because they were, I didn't, you know, now I realize this. And, you know, at 10, 11, I maybe didn't pick up on all the context and all the things, mm-hmm. subtext and things going on in the issue. I thought, you know, they were just mind controlled and in a circus, and then Beast found them, and then they joined the X-Men. That's what I thought happened. And then it turns out that was not X-Men. No. That was not Giant Size X-Men 1.
No.
And I had never actually read this before, so this was a kind of an eye-opener for me. And so I don't know if this is the right coloring on my book or not. I hope yours does look great.
Mine looks great.
That's another option. Another good way to read it would just be to read it online for like a couple bucks.
Yeah.
I like to hold them myself. I like to have something physical I can hold here.
I like to hold them too.
Yeah. But so Storm's like, well, you know, your offer is intriguing. You know, your offer to leave here to go to New York. And I'm just going to take you up on that. Storm recruited.
Oh, yeah.
And then we move on to probably the most interesting character of this issue, Sunfire,
mm-hmm.
who is just a complete fucking asshole.
The whole time. The entire fucking book.
Entire book. He's an asshole. Now, his first appearance was, I believe, X-Men 64, from just a little, well, it's been a while here, late 60s. And he's a samurai. And his father was killed in the bombing of Nagasaki, which is what activated his X gene. And he is very upset with Western culture. Not into it at all. And basically, when Charles Xavier asks him to join the team, he's like, fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you. I hate you. Yes, I'll join your team.
Yeah, I'll do it. Fuck it. Why not?
I'll fucking join your team. Whatever. Fuck you. I hate you, though.
I hate you. Get off my property. Yeah, I'll see it home in a little while.
Get the fuck off my property. Yeah, sure.
I'll see you at the house.
And he agrees. And then Sunfire's recruited for this new mission.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to let you do this. Now, this is all you.
Yes. Yeah, because the next one is obviously Colossus. So it starts off in Lake Baikal, Siberia.
Siberia.
On the USD Ordinsky farm.
Which is like a collective, like a communist farm, right?
Yeah, it seems like it's like a farm that they do all of the stuff for the state, and the state gets all the shit. So it starts off right out of the gate. They're just calling him Peter. Like, they didn't worry about the name.
No Piotr.
No Piotr. Yeah. It's just Peter.
Just Peter the Russian.
But one of the dudes, like, looks up, and he's like, hey, check this shit out. Something's happening over here. Looks up, and he sees a runaway tractor headed right for a kid. Of course, we don't have any idea who the fuck this kid is.
Kid is unnamed.
Kid is unnamed. Remains unnamed.
Hot, though. It's why this book's hot.
Remains completely unnamed. So, Peter rushes.
Peter.
Just rushes toward this tractor to save this kid on the way, transforming into an organic metal man. And in a really cool artistic scene, which yours looks a little cooler than mine does on this one. But
is that right?
Yeah.
Mine looks cooler.
With all the pink and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually does. It looks like Kirby Crackle around it.
Yeah, kind of. So he grabs up the little girl, doesn't have time to get out of the way from the tractor. Bam. Tractor just runs right into him, and they're like, well, he doesn't know how the people are going to afford another tractor, but that's a story for another time.
That's right, because it's his neighbor's tractor.
Yeah, it's not even his.
The scene of the tractor exploding is not quite on par with the Incredible Hulk number one panel of Hulk smashing into the Jeep.
It's not, because they didn't even really show the tractor hit him.
No, it actually doesn't.
No.
Did Colossus punch it, or did it run into him, or what happened to
it? It's not really explained as much, but it looked like to me probably smacked it out of the way.
I mean, he's got a hand up.
Yeah, and then the next, it's just exploded.
And it's just blown up, and then he's standing there holding the girl.
It kind of alludes to it ran into him, but I don't think it would have blown into pieces like that.
I think he had to punch it. I think this is very much Conan the Barbarian punching the horse.
Yeah.
He punched the tractor.
Yeah.
Which I can respect.
But saves this unnamed little girl who nobody knows who the fuck it is.
Well, we know it's Ileana Rasputin.
Eventually.
But, okay.
But I mean, it doesn't make allusion to that's his sister. It doesn't make allusion to that he even knows who that kid is.
No.
In this book.
It actually, wait, it says his sister, doesn't it? Or no?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
I may have read it differently, but the way I remember it, it doesn't say anything about who that kid is.
My bad. And then what happens?
Then he, of course, gets the voice in his head. Hey, I need you to do something for me.
Now, his name is Peter Rasputin.
Peter Rasputin. Yep.
I wish
Piotr.
Talk to you.
And he decides that what Professor Xavier is proposing to him sounds awesome, but he's got to go talk to Ma and Pa. So he goes to talk to his parents, and you know, he tells them, like, I'm happy here. I have a good life. I want to be with you guys, but I want to know what you think. And his dad basically tells him that you already know what you're going to do. You just do what you feel.
Just follow your heart.
Follow your heart.
That's basically what he tells him, yeah.
And Peter just tells him, my heart tells me I want to stay, but my conscience tells me I need to go do this for the world. And therefore, you have Colossus on your team.
And off he goes.
Off he goes, baby. And I've got, this is the best origin told yet, but I might be a little biased on that one.
Well, yeah, that's fair. I mean, so far, basically all the new characters have had better origins than the characters we already know.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about, like,
I don't know, Wolverine. Everybody. Wolverine popped one. Oh, everybody?
Everybody.
Nah, well, you are biased. I mean, Wolverine popped a claw and cut a guy's tie off.
Yeah.
Come on, that's pretty epic. It's ultimate fuck your boss culture.
Colossus destroyed a tractor, a runaway tractor.
Not even sure if he punched
it. To save a little girl. Yeah. Not sure if that's his sister or some kid.
That's obvious. Well,
some kid that lives down the street.
It's later retconned that to be his sister, but you're right. We don't know if it's a kid down the street. At this point, we don't.
Just a real good dude.
Just a really nice guy that turns metal and beats up people's tractors that are poor and they can't afford. What the fuck? He's an asshole. He's totally an asshole.
I want that dude to come out of his house and be like, my tractor, what'd you do?
Yeah, what the fuck, man? It's my only lawnmower. Dude.
You couldn't have just stopped it?
That's a steal. What? You know how much that fucking thing costs? That's what should have happened.
Better than been a Cub Cadet.
That's my damn John Deere, some bitch.
It's a red tractor.
I don't think the red one's International Harvester, you son of a bitch. How do you like that?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
See, I think he's a cocksucker. He's just broke a dude's tractor.
He just destroyed a guy's tractor.
He literally, if you look at those panels, he literally had time to step out of the way.
Oh, yeah. Didn't want to.
And just decided to just break someone's tractor instead.
Fuck this tractor.
Yeah. Unlike Conan the Barbarian punching the horse, that horse had it coming. That tractor.
You don't know if that tractor had it coming or not. Well,
you know what? That's true. It may be hard to start.
You don't know.
It may be a total dick in the winter. Something. Who knows? Very true. But on the next page, I handled the last one that was controversial. I'm gonna give this one to you.
Yeah, well, that's fine. It opens up in Camp Verde, Arizona.
Camp Verde. Now that sounds green.
It is green.
That
yep.
Doesn't look green on the
doesn't
page.
Doesn't look green. It ain't green on my page. I don't know what yours.
Does your page look as cool as mine?
No. No, well, like...
But the purples and
mine's
the
more like daytime. Yours is more like mid-afternoon.
Yeah, mine looks... Actually looks pretty fucked up. Like, yeah. Like storm's there. she's about to rain hell down on this guy.
You got a dude chasing down a bison.
We have a guy. We have a man on foot chasing a buffalo.
Yep.
John Proudstar, as we're told. He's an Apache.
Yep.
And he is...
Just tackles that buffalo.
Well, it's terrible what the captions say. He's ashamed of his people.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're just sitting around moping because they got all their land taken away.
I know for a fact that this is fairly insensitive to the plight of Native Americans. I feel like there's some things here that were done really wrong.
Oh, yeah.
In 1975. It's not funny. I'm not laughing at the fact that it was done this way. This is just what we got.
Yeah.
And we can't change it.
Nope. No, you just kind of try to make light of it a little bit. Like,
it's, yeah, it's,
don't read too much into what they did.
Well,
40 years ago.
I just, you know, if I do, I can't enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, and that may be fucked up of me, but at the same time, I have to look at it and kind of go, well, you know, I realize this is wrong. This is fucked up. This is, there's some, definitely shit that wouldn't fly.
Yeah.
In, you know, about today's standards.
Well, like I said, here. I mean, 45 years ago.
Very true. And it goes on that this, you know, he basically, you know what, fuck it. He gets recruited by Professor Xavier after telling him, you know, basically to fuck off. And Xavier kind of challenges his manhood.
Yeah.
And he agrees to join the team.
Yeah.
Which, it's all kind of fucked up. You guys can read it if you want. It's dated. It's absolutely fucking dated.
Very dated.
And that's all you can really say about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We turn the page, though.
Turn the page.
So with the introductions of the characters out of the way, we jump into the story proper here.
Jumping into the meat and taters.
The meat and taters of the issue start with chapter 2 and When There Was One. And I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I don't know. It could be like Nobody Tells the Hulk. Nope.
No one abuses Rick Jones quite like the Hulk.
I don't know what "and when there was one" means.
And when there was one instead of "and then there was one."
Yeah, I totally wrote it down wrong in my notes.
Well, I get that because the quote would be "and then there was one,"
which would make a lot more sense.
It does. So I guess this is more of a time thing. And it opens up at Westchester, New York, which we all know is the school for gifted. What is it? Gifted?
It's the school for gifted mutants, isn't it?
Is that what it is? The school for gifted mutants?
Maybe it's the school for gifted children.
Yeah, maybe it's something like that.
Because they don't want them to know.
Yeah, that's because I was thinking. I wanted to say mutants, but I'm like, no, that's not right.
I think it's the Xavier School for Gifted Children.
Okay, there we go.
Hi, I'm Jubilee, and it wasn't that long ago when I felt that way, too. But then I became a student at Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, and everything changed.
Here we are, Westchester, New York, and this is hilarious, and this is so Bronze Age that it definitely begs pointing out. It refers to the school as a latter-day Tower of Babel, and at first, of course, but then a telepathic crash course in the English language had closed the communication gap in mere minutes.
Yeah, so like, nobody there spoke English, and he was just like, wait a minute, now you know it.
He just forced a Colossus, a Storm, and who else wouldn't know English?
Sunfire.
Here? Kurt?
And yeah, Sunfire and Kurt.
Sunfire's already been through this X-Men rigmarole.
Yeah, but that's the only, like, maybe it really is just Storm, Colossus, and Nightcrawler.
I would guess it is, because I'm pretty sure Proudstar speaks English.
Well, I mean, he's a Native American, so I would think he spoke English.
Well, I guess he could speak Apache. Oh,
he could.
But it seems like he speaks English. It doesn't put his little word bubbles in those little
hieroglyphics?
Yeah, whatever.
That might be a little racist.
Not hieroglyphics. You know how sometimes when they're speaking in a foreign language, they have the little...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like the little parentheses things.
Yeah, not parentheses, but they have...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what they're called, but I know what you're talking about. The little marks that denote that it's a different language.
Yeah. Which no one seems to have actually spoken that way. Charles just was speaking in their head.
Yeah.
So, anyway, after a short little Rosetta Stone crash course in the English language, the X-Men are now ready and dressed in their new costumes.
Dressed appropriately.
Noticeably, as you pointed out, Colossus is wearing little shorties.
Yeah. You got them pants on.
Because, you know... when he's not banded organic metal, his thighs are showing.
They are.
He's wearing go-go boots.
Wearing them thigh highs. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
He's definitely rocking some go-go boots.
Yeah.
And they addressed that. I guarantee when they colored it, they went, the fuck?
And just showing off them quads, man.
And they just said, no way.
Yeah. Honestly, it looks a little stupid when he's not wearing pants.
It does. But it looks even weirder with the blue pants.
Kinda, yeah. Should have just made him red.
Nothing else on his costume is blue.
No.
Nothing. That's an odd choice.
Definitely an odd choice.
But he does say, in English, in all my life, such clothing as this I have never seen. And then Storm says, the costume is beautiful and the fit perfect, but how did you? And we get an awesome explanation.
Yeah, very cool.
Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four made these costumes out of unstable molecules, which is really all anyone needs to know.
Good way of tying it in with the rest of what's going on.
Absolutely, and they always do this. This is Marvel. They do a pretty good job of it. Not always, but most of the time they do a pretty good job. So we cut here to Sunfire basically being like, now why the fuck did you drag us all here? And Charles says, well, I don't have to explain this. I'm going to let someone else do it for me. And Cyclops finally busts into the room. Cyclops, one of the members of the original team here. Yep. He busts in and he says, these details are really simple. Let me walk you through what's happened here.
Yeah, and then he tells him the X-Men just disappeared.
Which is totally wrong, and he knows better.
Yeah, completely untrue.
Munch is farting, or can he just not remember?
Well, at this point, like, it's not really explained whether he knows or not, because, like, it says Cerebro found them, which would be, like, the new X-Men, but then Cerebro found Krakoa, or a super mutant that they didn't know what it was.
Yeah, Cerebro located a mutant presence around Indonesia, right?
Yeah, something like that.
And the original X-Men are sent to investigate this alarm of a super powerful mutant somewhere in an island chain.
Yes.
They board the Blackbird.
What happens is Cyclops, you know, Professor X goes, like, you got to go find this mutant before somebody else does. And Cyclops goes, it's traveling time.
It's traveling time. 'Cause, you know. A reference to Thing.
Yeah, but come on, that's dumb.
Where does he say that? Let me see
this. Right, it's the middle panel of that page where he's explaining shit.
It's traveling time. It's
traveling time, right before they get into the Stratojet.
You heard the Professor X-Men. It's traveling time. That sounds like Slim Summers.
So fucking dumb.
You know, Stan Lee really wanted his name to be Slim.
Yeah.
And Jack Kirby was like, fuck no. His name is not Slim. And Stan tried for a long time to make it Slim, but Scott stuck, thankfully.
Yeah.
They board. Now, what's the name of the jet?
The Stratojet.
The Stratojet.
That's all they call it. They never call it the Blackbird.
It's not the Blackbird here. Is this before the Blackbird?
I think it is, because it doesn't look the same either.
You're right. It's clearly, it's got some kind of wing markings. I don't know what they mean. Anyway, so yeah, they lift off and they head out towards their quarry. They land on this island, the original team. It's actually not the original team here. This is the original minus Beast.
Plus Havoc and Polaris.
Havoc and Polaris. This is the X-Men, I think, that were recently seen in, like, issue 65.
Who, by the way, they never actually call Polaris in the entire issue. They just keep calling her Lorna Dane.
Was she Magneto's daughter at this point, or was she not?
I don't know, but they do refer to her as, maybe not exactly in those words, but the Mistress of Magnetism.
Right, so there you go. It's kind of like as bad as Wanda. Is that Magneto's daughter? Is Magneto your dad?
All right. Then you find out later on that he's everybody's dad.
He is everybody's dad because he's kind of, I get around, round, I get around. Kind of Magneto's thing.
Yeah. He listened to a lot of Beach Boys back in the day.
He did not know anything about condoms.
But couldn't he just have, like, manipulated the magnetic field around it and, like, put it where it needed to be? And, like,
obviously he did. It was a home run every time.
What about, like, Pietro's, did he just rush through?
God. Do you think the sperm had superpower?
Maybe.
Is that how this works? The X gene is actually the sperm itself. It just, I don't know. Maybe the
I
one
I don't remember which one makes male and female, the X or the Y.
X and Y. But no,
I think the Y is the male because the two X's is female. So
I think you're right.
X genes and everything.
X genes and all.
Yep.
Did Wanda's sperm have the ability to manipulate reality? And could it, you know, affect probability?
Could affect the probability.
Making twins.
Yeah.
She wanted a brother.
What's the probability of twins? Like 0.2. Not anymore.
So back to our story. So back to the story. The X-Men land on this island, and they're searching for this mutant. And they don't know exactly what they're looking for. when all of a sudden they get captured.
And for some reason, Iceman keeps shit-talking Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, I don't know. He says it like three times where he's like, this ain't Cleveland, but there's a bunch of shit, so maybe it is.
I mean, I think Cleveland gets that reputation of being the armpit of the world.
I guess.
And so I guess it's not Cleveland. It's worse? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, it's worse. It's a piece of shit, so it might actually be Cleveland.
Ah, well, see, he's kind of a douche.
Yeah, kind of shit-talking Cleveland.
That's okay, though. Cleveland does suck. I've been there.
I've never been.
Played some shows there. Mm. Oh, there's a constant fire in the sky from just burning chemicals. It's not a great place.
So the X-Men are just blindsided by something. We have no idea what it is.
It looks like this Kirby crackle yeah. With lines coming out of it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And
Kirby assaults the X-Men.
Next, Cyclops just wakes up on the X-Jet with autopilot on and flying it back to the X-Mansion. And he can't remember what happened, but he does figure out here that his powers don't work. He has no powers. He can open his eyes with no visor on and no beams shoot out. He freaks out. He runs in to tell the professor he's back. And the professor is like, what? Where the hell are the others? He explains the story. And then all of a sudden, Cyclops' optic blasts kick back in. He's given a new visor. And then Professor X leaves to recruit the new team.
I think it's a little bit a good thing to say about this side too, or this page, that whenever his powers come back, they're stronger.
They're way stronger.
Way stronger.
He actually shoots his shit out and blows himself backwards.
Yeah, because it even makes mention that Professor X had to modify one of his old visors to restrain the new power.
And, you know, I noticed visually, when you see Cyclops, he has the two little red dots in the visor. Like, his eyes are visible in the red visor.
I like that.
I do, too. Actually, I've always liked that.
Yeah.
That's something really cool. I'd actually, this is my favorite Cyclops look.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, the blue.
Yeah, the 70s look.
Yeah.
Hair covered. Better to me than the Jim Lee look of the 90s.
100%.
I don't like the head condom hair showing thing that they did later on. I like this. I like. Why would Cyclops have his hair sticking out?
Totally agree.
What fucking X-Men has time to fuck with their hair?
Apparently most of them, because they all wore that for a minute.
They all did, yeah.
All had to be quaffed and ready.
That's stupid. So Cyclops tells him, now it's time, though, to head back to Krakoa and rescue the original X-Men. And that's where Sunfire is just like,
ain't fucking doing it.
Incorrect, Cyclops. Now you go back to Krakoa, not I. I will have no part in this fool's errand. And then Cyclops is like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, basically just tells him like, well, all right, fine. If you don't want to do it, fuck off and we'll see you later.
And then he leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sunfire just leaves.
Yeah, he's back on the same page.
Yeah. It literally like takes three panels for him to come back.
Oh, this is just amazing. Okay, so
that's where you get some of the more racist bullshit right here.
Yeah, Sunfire just up and leaves the jet while it's in flight. The X-Men argue, you know, they're new. They're a new team. They just learned English. They've apparently learned all the insults, though. That's the first thing that they were taught.
Cyclops calls Proudstar Geronimo, which is terrible.
Just awful.
And then Geronimo.
When I was reading this, I was like, oh my God.
The next line, it did make me laugh. It's got a little bit of bullshit at the end of it, but Proudstar literally says, well, I'll be jiggered one eye. Like,
man,
fuck is that?
I don't know. This is not the way I'd write a comic. God, this. I just want to say there's...
What does that even mean?
I don't even want to know.
It's so terrible.
All I know is that they're saying this in reference to Sunfire, who just left the jet two panels ago.
Yeah, and then is back like, hey, let me in.
Back up, knocking on the door saying, you know what? Just go ahead and let me back in.
Yeah.
In mid-flight.
Man.
This reminds me of The Last Jedi. Sunfire was able to leave the jet, have a complete mission on his own, and return to the jet before it ever made it where it was going.
Yep.
Now, he gets back on just in time to be sure to call Kurt a misfit like 72 times.
He does just keep saying it.
Kurt basically just says, why the hell are you back? And he's like, my reasons are my own.
Yeah.
And he just keeps that to himself for the rest of the issue. And now we begin part three.
Assault Force.
Ooh. Bitching. Now this is where they break up into smaller little teams.
Yeah, that's where everybody starts getting their superhero names.
Yeah, yes, essentially. They do. Yes, they do.
But I don't really think they tell too many. Like, it basically, like, nobody really gives a shit what their superhero name is.
They don't really care. They're like, yeah, whatever.
Because, like, they're just calling each other whatever they can. Because I think Wolverine just calls Banshee Irish the whole fucking...
Dude, Wolverine doesn't give a fuck.
He doesn't care at all.
He doesn't give a shit. They put Wolverine with Banshee.
Yep, and they're taking the east. Colossus is with Storm. They're taking the north. Nightcrawler is with Sunfire, which is hilarious. They're coming from the west, and Cyclops and Thunderbird coming in from the south.
Notably, Proudstar does say the name is Proudstar One-Eye, again, calling Cyclops One-Eye, which is, it's funny because Cyclops clearly has two eyes, especially in this issue. You can see those bright, burning orbs.
Clearly showing that he has two eyes.
Clearly. I do think it's funny that Banshee looks like that David Cassidy guy.
He kind of does.
He looks like a 70s
maybe
pop
like
star.
A little older Danny Bonaducci.
Bonaducci. He's got a terrible vibe.
He does.
He really looks like something my mom would have been into.
Yeah.
Like had posters on her wall of this guy, like some kind of teen idol. Fucking weirdo. Colossus, when he jumps out of the jet, he's still wearing his pants.
Yeah.
Which is cool because in the next panel, he does not have his pants on. It is fun that Sunfire flies Nightcrawler down.
Yeah.
And then, of course...
Misfit.
Of course... Wolverine just holds on to Banshee's feet.
Yeah. Did Banshee make mention to like how much he weighs?
Yeah, because he's got an adamantium skeleton.
Yeah.
What's really funny is this, you know, the Wolverine we've come to know would never hold on to Banshee's feet.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit.
Nope. He'd have been like, I got healing powers. Don't give a shit. And just
jump out. But no, Storm flying down Colossus. I think maybe Storm references how heavy Colossus is.
Yeah, well, like she tells him, you idiot, you can't jump out. You can't fly. And he goes, no, but I know how to land.
Yeah, and he just turns metal blue. And he's in a hole. And then, of course, you know, we get the team of Proudstar and Cyclops who get along wonderfully.
Oh, yeah. Everybody they put into a team together gets along so well, with the exception of like Storm and Colossus, where they don't really know each other
interaction. They don't really argue at all. So over the next few pages, we basically get examples of how everyone's powers work.
Mm-hmm.
Each little team of two runs into some kind of obstacle that they have to overcome with their powers.
Yep.
First of all, it's with Cyclops and Proudstar, and they fight vines.
Yep.
Living vines that come down and attack them. Of course, we already know Cyclops' power. He eye laser beams the fuck out of him.
Yeah, and Thunderbird just kind of rips him out of the ground.
Thunderbird's kind of like a Hulk, strongman kind of character.
Yeah.
He kind of fills the role of the Thing or...
It's traveling time.
Yeah. That was Cyclops, but yes. Proudstar steps into that role. He's the muscle. Over on the next page...
Banshee and Wolverine got crabs.
They fight crabs. Giant fucking weird crayfish things.
Yeah.
But that's after, isn't it, that Colossus and Storm?
No, that's before, because Colossus and Storm are next.
Wait, is mine backwards?
Is it? Oh, it is, isn't it? Because I get the rock slide after the giant crabs.
Oh, weird. I don't guess it matters how you slot it in.
I don't guess it really does.
You got the crabs first?
Yeah, I had the crabs first.
Okay. Wolverine and Banshee, it's in an amazing display of what a sonic screech would be. Banshee screams into a crab.
Mm-hmm. Just screams at it and it blows it up.
Splits it in half. With a nice spracked.
Spracked.
Which is a terrible sound effect.
It is. Just think about that one for a minute.
Yeah, spracked. Wolverine, obviously, is the best at what he does, and what he does is cut up crabs.
He was in Japan for a minute. He knows how to do sushi with those things.
He was. Wolverine and Banshee make short work of these crabs. Wow, it's so dumb.
It is.
I'm sorry, that's just really bad. Yeah. I was reading this going, why is Wolverine fighting a fucking crab?
Yeah, explanation.
Why is there a giant?
Just a giant crab comes up and they're like, fuck this thing.
As we know, Krakoa is a sentient island. Is it saying that it has crabs? Like, did it pick this up from another island?
Yeah.
Like, why does it have these crabs? Yeah. And in effect, is Wolverine some kind of cream or salve that you would apply?
I like to think that Wolverine and Banshee are now like that medicine that you have to put on to get rid of crabs.
They're like Desitin or something. They're like down there cleaning it up.
Absolutely. You
know? What the fuck is happening here?
I don't know. I don't know why they're fighting crabs, but it doesn't make any sense the next couple pages either.
I mean, you know what? Honestly, they're just displays of their abilities. But honestly, if you're going to have Wolverine with his claws like crabs?
Yeah, crabs. Is that really the most efficient?
Okay.
All right.
Then we go on to the sentient rock slide.
Rock slide, which is the dumbest thing.
It doesn't seem very smart.
No.
It doesn't seem very self-aware. We do get Colossus screaming in Russian. I have no idea what he says.
No, I don't either.
It probably, go fuck yourself, is what I'd say it is. So this rock slide basically like changes direction on Storm, and Colossus grabs a tree, and Storm, of course, whips up like a tornado, and they bat the shit out of the rocks and send them out into the river. Now, here we see that Cyclops meets up with them at the end of every one of these little...
Yeah, like all the little sub-teams coming together at this temple that has formed.
So they're all meeting. After a display of their powers, they're all meeting up at a temple.
Yep.
That's popped up out of the island.
So the last set that you get is, of course, Nightcrawler and Sunfire.
Oh, here's where he bamps.
Yeah, but again, never get that sound effect, and it does it with flame and brimstone.
It does. I see it. Okay, no wonder I was confused. He is bamfing, but it's not in the way that we grow accustomed to seeing it for so many years.
I mean, it's always described as like a puff of smoke. Uh-huh. And the smell of that brimstone.
Yes.
But in this, it actually describes it as a puff of flame.
This kind of disappears. Like, and they're getting attacked by birds.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like that this wouldn't be any issue whatsoever.
No.
That they would just be like, oh, birds.
Well, honestly, like, they had nothing for Nightcrawler. So all he had, like, oh, my God, I'm getting attacked. And then he just kind of, like, teleports away.
I mean, you know.
You can't really do anything
about it. Like we've said, kind of, you know, like, sometimes key issues are like this. Yeah. They're awesome for what they bring to the table, but they're not necessarily awesome for the story that they deliver. I feel like Sunfire here could just have gone nuclear and killed all these birds immediately.
I do like in like the far left bottom panel where that one bird is like screaming across the bottom of the panel on fire.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because Sunfire is saying, I prefer the direct approach, which is just fucking lighting everything on fire. Yeah. Sunfire is a complete asshole.
Yep.
I love him. He is one of my favorite samurai X-Men assholes, if not the only one. So now all the teams, they get together and they move into this temple. Cyclops tells them, we're at the place. This is where they're being held. They go into the temple. Colossus kicks down a door and we get the old team. And they're being sucked on by what look like vines or branches or something.
Mm-hmm.
They free the team. And that's where things...
Angel becomes Admiral Akbar.
Well, how?
It's a trap!
It's a trap!
Basically just clued us into the fact that this whole thing was a trap, like Angel said, like Munch said.
Yep.
He Admiral Akbar'd it. It's a trap! And we get the origin of Krakoa. Krakoa was brought to life by an atomic test. It's like a hive mind.
Yeah.
Of all the inhabitants of the island.
Yeah, it's very much like the Brood.
Very much. Very, very similar. It's a hive mind of all, and it's hungry. And it captured the X-Men. It needed more, so it let Cyclops go to bring more back. And he did so like a good little boy.
Absolutely.
Brought everyone back.
And that's where you figure out that Krakoa can talk.
And interestingly, in Dawn of X and Powers of 10, Krakoa cannot talk.
Because in those, it's just the island. It doesn't have like this sentient walk around face piece.
Isn't it interesting that it is they're one and the same?
Yeah.
It is. It's very odd to me.
Well, do you I kind of wonder if maybe like by the end of this what happens, maybe it can't do that anymore.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, we'll get to what happens to it. It's a very funny way to deal with the problem.
Yeah, yeah,
isn't it? Pretty interesting. You know that no one ever attempts to help Krakoa?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you can tell right here, like, it's talking to him about, like, it's hungry and it needs to feed, and they're just like, fuck you, and they start kicking its ass.
Yeah, they immediately, no one, it's funny because they were sent here by Charles to potentially help a very powerful mutant.
Mm-hmm.
When they find said mutant and it tells them what happened to it, they're like, "Oh, it needs to die."
It just needs to start kicking its ass.
We just need to kill this thing.
Yeah.
No one ever stops to think like, "How's Krakoa feel about this?"
Right.
I mean, it's alive.
Yeah.
Now we do get some beautiful art here.
Some great artwork.
I think there's some great artwork. It seems that Dave Cockrum really understands the team dynamic, and has all the X-Men.
Yeah, especially like this panel right here where they're all attacking Krakoa.
Yeah, like in concert. Like everyone's working together. It actually looks like real teamwork. And I have to say, Havoc has one of the coolest looking powers I've ever seen.
It does look really cool the way they portraying the power down here.
Yeah, the illustrations of his, what would you call it? It's like a kinetic energy, right?
It's like a concussive blast. I mean, yeah. I'm not exactly sure what it.
And the illustration of it, it's just really cool. It's like circles.
Yeah,
there's something really neat about the way they draw Havoc's power.
But I love this panel, and even in the description of it, the mere words would never begin to describe the sheer unbridled savagery of the battle that follows. So we won't even attempt it.
I don't even blame them. I mean, you know, honestly, looking at this though. Besides Wolverine, who's clearly going to get fucked up there in the left corner, they're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And this is a great, I mean, like we've already said, this is a wonderful panel. Very nicely rendered by Dave Cockrum. Colossus is down there punching away, so is Proudstar. I'm not sure what Nightcrawler's doing. Looks like he might have slipped on a bar of soap.
He can't do anything. Like, what's he
really can't.
Do? He's basically useless at this point. He's
actually more useless than Wolverine would be here. Now, wait a second. There's Jean again.
Yeah.
But Jean was not with the teams that were broke up. This is why I keep forgetting she's here.
Well, she was part of the OG X-Men that were being siphoned.
I like keep forgetting that Jean exists.
That's because nobody cares about Jean.
That's not true.
She sucks.
I like Jean Grey. I don't know why. I don't know how I keep getting confused here. Anyway.
Where'd that bitch come from?
Yeah, where the fuck did Jean come from? I'm like, I didn't question Havoc or Polaris.
Yeah.
Just, where the fuck she come from? So after the battle that cannot be described, Professor's like, dude, stop, Scott.
You're not
stop.
Doing anything.
He coordinates this attack with Storm and Polaris. So what Charles does is essentially mind blast Krakoa. Like I said, never attempts to help it. Like not even once.
Nope.
Does anyone try to help Krakoa?
Just fuck this thing.
Charles hits it with a mind blast, makes it pause. Storm, using lightning, supercharges Polaris, whose magnetic force reaches down into the core of the Earth and then somehow cancels out gravity.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's how that works. But
I'm pretty sure it's not, but, you know, whatever. We're using comic book science here.
Yep.
Cancels out gravity and blasts Krakoa into space.
Yep.
Just like that.
Just like that. Easy peasy.
And it creates like this whirlpool that kind of sucks the X-Men down into it.
Like before that happens, they make a pretty good mention to where they make a little sidebar to note that somebody has to get everybody off the island. Well, Polaris can't do it herself, so like Havoc starts to go back for her, and then Iceman's like, fuck you, I got this.
Yeah, that's right. Iceman, yeah, he does, he has it.
He basically like flips off Havoc and is like, this is my girl. Fuck, and he grabs her and like runs off.
It's like, this is my shit.
Yep.
I've got this. You know, Iceman is pretty handy in the water. He makes him a little boat.
Yep.
Which is cool.
And then puts the bubble around it so that they don't drown whenever it goes into the whirlpool.
Exactly. And they pop out and they're safe. Scott bursts through it. And then Storm asks, what are we going to do with 13 X-Men?
What are we going to do with 13 X-Men?
And that's the end, basically, of this issue. The story presented here is very,
blasé.
Yeah, because it's not about this story. It's about what this did for the X-Men.
Absolutely.
And it's huge. I mean, damn, Wolverine, Storm?
Yeah.
The fucking Colossus?
Yeah.
I mean, Nightcrawler?
Nightcrawler?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. And they come out of the story, like Storm says, with 13 X-Men.
Yeah.
And it goes along with both of them. They fight each other. They fucking, you know, the teams can't get along and blah, blah, blah. And eventually the old team spins out into X-Factor. So, you know, this was giant size, right? And it wasn't ever supposed to continue into the main book. It was supposed to continue into Giant Size X-Men 2.
Yeah.
4 months later. I'm sorry, 3 months later.
Yeah.
And, of course, as we know, it didn't. It
blew the fuck up.
It actually blew the fuck up, and they ended up moving it into X-Men proper with issue 94, which would be, they ended the reprints at issue 93, and then we get, this team moves into X-Men at 94, and it's a whole new era for the X-Men. We get the all-new, all-different X-Men. Chris Claremont takes over writing it. we have Dave Cockrum and then John Byrne and, you know, so many great artists and things. Claremont writing it for the next almost 20 years.
Yeah.
A lot of important things happen here, start to unfold for the X-Men. I mean, this was a big, not the greatest issue, because honestly, I don't think they realized the impact. And maybe this didn't have the impact that issue 94, 95, and 96 have.
Yeah.
And maybe it does, but it doesn't matter. Key issue wise, it's a key because it's first appearance.
Yeah, it's key. It's key because it's first appearance of four people.
It's not
four or five people.
Yeah, it's not really key what they do. It's some cool shit. There's a lot of.
It makes for some great books coming up.
I hope so. So I got so into doing the research for this, like maybe way too into doing the research for this, that I've decided I had to read it all.
Mm-hmm.
And after discovering that I'd never read it to begin with, I was like, holy shit. So I went to shopping.
Yeah.
You know, because I knew they had made a big, giant omnibus.
Oh, yeah?
You know, a giant one that has like, what are 50 issues in it? Maybe not that many. And I found it. Ended up buying it. I actually, on eBay, found X-Men Omnibus, Uncanny X-Men Omnibus Volume 1, starting with Giant Size X-Men. It's a $100 book.
Yeah.
Cover price.
Mm-hmm.
I found it for $80, best offer. Offered them $75, and they took it.
Nice.
So I'll be getting that soon, because I'm about to read all this shit.
Hell yeah.
Like, I'm really actually, like, I watched so many interviews to get ready for this. I was watching Chris Claremont interviews. Yeah. Which actually didn't even tie into this story. Not really. I mean, I know he created Krakoa as just a being in the X office at the time. But, you know, I tried to find Dave Cockrum stuff. Man, Cockrum didn't do interviews.
Right.
So there's nothing out there about him. You know, of course, Len Wein would always talk about stuff like this, which is cool. He's on all the Kirby documentaries and stuff. Documentaries. You know, Len Wein... He wrote this. I think we talked about this earlier. It's very possible he was very distracted when he wrote this.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't seem... I mean, it's cool. I get what they were doing. You know, they had the edict in the office, create an international team. They did just that. Absolutely. Without a doubt, they created a new team.
Absolutely.
And it did find its footing.
Yeah.
It did, you know, come onto the market strong. Now, a lot of people wrote in and said they hated it. They didn't like this idea, you know. And of course, there's always going to be people that don't like something. Or,
sure.
You know, that's.
Well, it didn't take them long to warm up to it.
No, it actually
after
didn't.
It came out and they started reading it, they loved it.
So what's crazy is that X-Men went from being this, you know, bottom line seller for them, $200,000 a month, which is just insane, to being their number one book, and it was their number one book for years and years and years.
Yeah.
crazy shit there. And Claremont was still on it when the Jim Lee relaunch happened in 92 or 91.
Fucking ridiculous.
And it sold 8 million copies,
man.
You know, they Marvel bought him a private plane that he gave to his mom.
Wow.
He never even had a license. His mom his mom would fly his plane for him.
That's insane.
Yeah, it is nuts. I mean, you talk about moving some books.
Yeah.
Chris Claremont has sold some books in his time.
Fucking A.
And it's X-Men. I mean, there's a lot of people our age, and we kind of touched on this at the beginning of the episode, but because of that cartoon, know the X-Men, love the X-Men, even the 90s, even the late 90s, early 2000s, even the movies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hugh Jackman and some of the other, gosh, those movies are so bad.
They're so bad.
So fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The First Class, just when I saw that movie, I saw the title, I was like, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be the original X-Men.
I did too.
And then
they fucked it up. And
wow.
I don't even want to get started on that.
Man, it's terrible.
I don't even want to get into that.
If you had to pick a favorite X-Men movie, what would it be?
No.
Great answer. Yeah. Shit.
Maybe X2.
Gosh, I was going to say that.
Just for, like, Nightcrawler. I mean, like, either that or maybe Days of Future Past.
Like, I want to say Days of Future Past, but then when I think about the Sentinels and I think about how bad that was, I'm like, it really wasn't good, though.
It wasn't good either. But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the flower growing out of a pile of turds.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you just got to pick something that doesn't, boy, the least bullshit.
Apocalypse was awful.
Apocalypse. I haven't even watched Dark Phoenix because Apocalypse was so bad.
Oh, I haven't watched Dark Phoenix or New Mutants. I won't watch New Mutants.
New Mutants, I think, is going to come out on HBO Max soon, and I'm going to try it just to see how terrible it is.
Why would it be on HBO Max?
I don't know. Or maybe I don't.
Hulu, maybe.
It's coming out on something, and I'm going to watch
it.
Well,
they own Fox, and that was
them. Yeah, I'm aware.
Are you going to watch it? Yeah. Oh, you are?
Probably.
It looks like hot trash.
Oh, yeah, it looks like garbage.
Looks like a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Looks like a dumpster fire roasting a bear. I actually think there's a bear in it.
But there is.
Yeah, the demon bear.
Yeah. But I watched that dumpster fire of a movie, The Fantastic Four.
You did. You watched that.
And I'm talking about like the recent reboot.
Josh Trank.
Yeah, the trash, just god-awful, why does this exist movie. So, you know, if I watch that thing, I might as well watch New Mutants.
Yeah, I can't decide if you're better than me or worse than me, because I looked at that piece of shit FF movie and said, no way.
I had to know how bad it was. I had to.
You had to.
I had to.
So you're probably going to watch Snyder Cut.
I might. That one's up in the air because it's DC shit.
Well, it's just as bad as Foxman.
I agree with that completely.
I mean, Foxman shit is rough.
It's bad.
It's fucking rough. I like the first one because at the time, and we talked about this on our favorite non-MCU movies back on episode 4. I want to say it was like more than 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But X-Men was cool because I couldn't believe it happened.
Yeah, it was all that we had.
It was everything that you had. X2 was like finally Wolverine's claws were unleashed, and then I don't know what X3 was supposed to be. Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix.
It had Kelsey Grammer. That's all I thought was important.
It was a great beast.
Kelsey Grammer was a perfect beast. Everything else was terrible. Juggernaut, yep. Everything was awful.
Yep.
Now, what was after that? First Class?
Yes.
They had to reboot.
Yep.
And then they rebooted.
They did First Class, and then they did Days of Future Past, then Apocalypse, and Dark Phoenix.
And then Dark Phoenix was a redo of 3.
Yep.
Which is just an already bombed movie.
Yep.
3 bombed. Dark Phoenix bombed.
Yep.
I'm just so glad Marvel has... I mean, I know, of course, right? But I'm so glad Marvel has this property now.
Oh, so much agreed. Like, I can't wait for them to do it and do it well.
Well, you know, everyone's like, oh, fuck, we got to get a new Wolverine.
No.
I actually think it'd be cool, and we kind of talked about this a little while ago. I think it'd be really cool to just leave Wolverine out of the first 3 X-Men movies.
Absolutely.
Just leave him out.
I think if they were smart, they would bust up like they have the comic books. And you get like a first set and a second set. That way it almost has like 2 lives without technically having to reboot anything.
Oh, that's beautiful. Exactly. I want to see the original 5 X-Men on a team together.
Absolutely.
That's something we never got in the Foxmen.
Yep.
We never got Angel with Iceman, with Cyclops, with... Damn, did you guys hear that? Surely you can hear that. Munch is just busting ass over here. Anyway, we never got the original 5.
No, because Beast was never really a part of anything until...
Right.
Until 3, and even then, he wasn't really a part of anything special.
No, he wasn't. And then he was just Blue Beast, too.
Angel never showed up until 3.
See, that's just all wrong. I mean, what were they thinking?
I don't know.
They just went with Wolverine because Wolverine sells, they thought.
Yeah.
And he does.
And he does.
And he does. But I think it'd be really cool to just not jump right to a Wolverine casting.
Yep.
That's my 2 cents. So what do you think overall about this issue?
I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, how would you rate this bad boy?
I don't think it's going to burn any barns down, but...
The fucking price will.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, the fucking price will burn some barns down.
I'd give it a solid, like, 2.
So you gave this a 2, so this is tied with Hulk.
Well, Hulk was 2.5.
Oh, right. But better than FF4.
Definitely better than FF4.
Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, definitely. It was good.
Think about this. This is a full of 13 years later.
Yeah. Which doesn't bode well. I think part of the reason why the score for this is down so far is because you're right. I mean, it's origin story. There's a lot of shit in it that just kind of it was dated as fuck, and it's just bad.
There's some of that shit,
but
rough.
There's so much of it that's the build of like we have to show what these characters do and who they are before you have a story.
You know, it's got the demo pages. Yeah. It's got the all that, the putting them together.
That's really the only reason that it brings it down.
Yeah, the recruiting. And then the fight. Now the fight scenes are beautifully rendered.
Yes. I mean, all that stuff. Once you get to like the back maybe 8 pages of the book, it's like amazing.
So, yeah. So, what's your take on Cockrum's art?
I like it. I think it's really good.
Well, that's good because he's going to be on the book for a while.
He's going to be on there for a bit.
So I figured I'll just read the omnibus and I'll just let you read it.
Yeah.
Because I figure you're the only one that's going to care.
Probably.
So I'll just pass that your way. That way we can both have a pretty. Because I honestly, like I said earlier, I thought that 111 was giant size. So I know I've already read that, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that should be cool.
I think this book, you know, I've said it like maybe twice already, but you know, it's big for what it does.
Mm-hmm.
However, the book itself just doesn't really do much for me. I mean, it's cool. It introduces Nightcrawler. It's great that it introduces Colossus and Storm. You know, but I would have to agree with you. I'm gonna give this one a 2.5.
Okay.
And honestly, the 2.5 is all the art half of the book. Now, yeah. I'm giving it 0 points for story. so it would be a 5
because yeah.
You know the artist gets 2.5 points. The writer gets 2.5 points. Yep. That's what combines to make it a 5.
Yep.
So this is just 2.5 all Dave Cockrum.
Gotcha.
And that badass Gil Kane cover.
Mm.
I love it. I fucking love it. I don't care. Besides Busted Beast, there's not one thing wrong with this book. Art wise.
There really isn't much to bitch and complain about.
So I would definitely say readers, you should look at it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying definitely don't rush out and pay. Well, that's not true. If I could own it, I would.
If you could rush out and find you a copy for fairly cheap, go ahead.
Yeah, if you can find one for under $1,200, it might be worth picking up. It's going to get only hotter.
Oh, yeah.
Because like we said, the X-Men are absolutely going to be involved in the MCU. So when that happens, it's going to go out of this world.
Yeah, just going to be over here sitting on my...
Yeah, I know you are, motherfucker. Well, that is the first ever co-installment of the Blitzkrieg Pop Supplemental. Finally got to review a book with somebody.
Yeah.
Munch, it's been a great time.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Matt, for the suggestion.
Glad we finally got to read something X-Men, so thank you.
Yeah, we did. We finally got to get in some X-Men for Munch's sake. Join us next time for episode 52 of the Blitzkrieg Pop, where we'll absolutely be reviewing Fantastic Four number 5, amongst other things. I'm sure we'll be talking plenty of shit about Falcon and Winter Soldier and whatever the hell else we can dig up.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. You guys have a great night. Keep it geek.
Mm-hmm.